for the coming year. You citizens have the right, the power, the responsibility of electing the person you want to be your chief administrator. You will make this decision. You will vote in a free and fair election on the first day of June. He hesitated, then added with a modest smile, "As a politician back in my native Austria once said, don't let anybody tell you how to vote. You go to the polls and vote for me."
The audience laughed, but Holly growled. He was born in Omaha, Nebraska. Pancho nodded. On the wall screen, Eberly was continuing.
"Our first year under the Constitution that we ourselves have written has been a very good year. We are in a stable orbit around Saturn, the farthest outpost of human civilization in the entire solar system. We have achieved self-sufficiency as far as food and our other life support requirements are concerned. The machinery of our habitat is performing admirably, thanks to the hard work and great care of our technicians and engineers. Our scientists have landed a probe on Titan, and although they have had some difficulties with it, I'm sure that in the coming year they will successfully regain contact with it and explore that mysterious world thoroughly."
Alone in her own apartment, Nadia Wonderly watched with growing apprehension. "He's going to tell them about the rings," she said to herself. "He's going to ruin everything."
"But in this coming year," Eberly went on, "we must begin to take larger steps. Steps that will assure our financial stability and economic well-being. Within easy reach of us, close enough almost to touch from here, in fact, lie the rings of Saturn, a treasure trove of the most precious commodity in the solar system, water. The time has come for us to begin to mine the rings, to sell their water ice to other human settlements throughout the solar system, to make ourselves wealthy by becoming the human race's primary supplier of water and life everywhere."
The audience leapt to its feet and roared its approval. Wonderly jumped to her feet, too, and screamed, "Never!" to her empty apartment.
In her apartment, Holly sunk her chin into her chest and glowered at the wall screen. The only way to stop him is to get Nadia to the rings before Election Day. Pancho shook her head. "She'll never be ready in time. We'd just be killing her." Holly turned to face her. "Then you'll have to do it, Punch." "Me?" Wanamaker started to say, "Now, wait a minute, you," Holly said to her sister. "You've got to go into the rings, Pancho."
18 February 2096, morning. Tavolera walked toward the simulations laboratory like a little boy, reluctantly trudging his way to school. "This is all crazy," he said to himself as he passed the administration building. People were hustling in and out. The place looked like a beehive of activity. That puzzled Tavolera. Normally, the admin center was as laid back and quiet as a collection of snails. Then he realized that Eberly had kicked off his re-election campaign last night, and now he wanted everybody to think he and his people were hard at work. "Yeah, sure," Tavolera said to himself, "until he gets himself re-elected." He had watched Eberly's speech on TV just like everybody else. Holly hadn't called him about it. She hadn't called him about anything. Not since he'd walked out on her. And the one time he'd called her, he'd let his temper get the better of him and messed it up. That was a stupid thing to do, Tavolera told himself bitterly. The one good thing in your life and you screw it up. "Yeah," he argued silently. "But all she wanted out of me was to use me for Wonderly's flight to the rings. She never cared about me. Not really. Not for myself." "Then what about the times you spent together before Wonderly decided she's going to the rings?" he asked himself. "What about the nights in bed with her? Way before all this crap about going to the rings started?" Shaking his head, Tavolera made his way up the four steps of the Sim Labs building and headed down the central corridor toward the laboratory itself. "Holly'd never go back to Earth with me," he told himself. "Hell, now she's running for chief administrator. If she wins, she'll never leave this habitat. If I wanted to go back home, she wouldn't go with me. He grunted as if struck in the heart. The way things are now, she wouldn't even cross a street to be with me. I screwed things up pretty damn well. He felt a jolt of electricity streak through him, though, when he opened the door to the simulations laboratory. Holly was standing there by the row of consoles with Wonderly and her sister Pancho. The three women seemed to be deep in heated conversation. "It's my problem, Pancho," Wonderly was saying. "I can't let you take the risks for me." "Try and stop me," Pancho replied, grinning. "I'm looking forward to this. Haven't had any real fun since I was running from a bunch of Jap security people at the Yamagata base on the moon." Wonderly turned to Holly. "Tell her she can't do this, Holly. Make her understand." "Nadia," Holly interrupted. "It was my idea for Ponch to fly the mission." Holly looked. Tavallera couldn't fathom the expression on Holly's face. Was it fear or guilt or just plain stubbornness? He decided it must be some of all three. A big, hard hand grabbed his shoulder. Tavallera spun around and saw Jake Wanamaker towering over him, the expression on his face perfectly clear. Grim determination. "Stay out of that argument, Raoul," Wanamaker said in a husky whisper. "It'd be like stepping into a trio of laser beams if you try to get between them. They'll slice you to ribbons."
"What's going on?"
"Pancho's going to make the run into the rings," said Wanamaker, looking totally unhappy about it. "Wonderly's relieved, but she doesn't want to admit it yet."
"And Holly?"
"It was Holly's bright idea." Glancing at the three women intently arguing across the room, Tavallera asked Wanamaker, "Should I power up the equipment or not?" A hint of a smile snuck across Wanamaker's craggy face. "Power it up, I guess. They can't stand there bickering all day. But don't get within 10 meters of them if you can avoid it." Tavallera almost tiptoed to the master console and began to activate the simulator's various systems. The excursion suit, standing empty in the corner where two hologram screens met, seemed to twitch slightly as Tavallera powered it up. He could see a glow of light inside the suit through the open hatch in its back. The wall screens came up with a seamless three-dimensional view of Saturn's rings, a bright gleaming expanse of glittering ice particles, flakes, pebbles, chunks as big as boulders, shining as brightly as a snowfield that went on as far as the eye could see, slim, twisting rings twining around one another like living vines made of ice. To Tavallera, it looked like an infinite swirl of sparkling diamonds, except for the streaks of darker material here and there, dust or soot, that broke the stunning display. Somehow the dark streaks made the ice particles seem brighter, even more dazzling to the eye. And the particles were dynamic. They shifted and moved, weaved in and out around one another, twirled and fluttered in an endless dance of dazzling complexity. Tavallera knew he was watching a real-time view of the rings, what the cameras outside the habitat were observing at this very moment. In the distance he saw a darker area, like a spoke radiating from the inner rim of the rings toward its outermost edge. Wanamaker nudged him, then silently pointed at Wonderly. The scientist had stopped arguing with Holly and her sister and was staring at the hollow view, raptly watching the rings in their intricate, fascinatingly beautiful ballet as they swirled around the mammoth planet Saturn. "It's settled," Holly said, suddenly as hard as steel. "Pancho's doing the excursion. Jake will fly her to the rings and pick her up afterward." Wonderly shook her head, but she was still staring at the hollow view, and there wasn't much force in her refusal. "It's settled," Holly repeated.
"Right," said Pancho. "Now let me get inside that suit and see what it feels like."
At that moment, the overhead lights went out and all the consoles went dark. Tavallera heard the sickening whine of electrical motors powering down. The sim lab was plunged into darkness.
Urbain was straining his eyes, staring at the satellite camera's three-dimensional image of Titan's surface. "There is something there," he told himself. "The ground is slightly smoother along a straight line across the ice, as if the tracks made by Alpha have been smoothed down, paved over. Ghost tracks," he thought. "Or perhaps I am merely seeing what I want to see, things that don't actually exist." He thought of Percival Lowell spending his life squinting through